Good morning. My name is Matt Grasso. I'm with the Department of Energy's Office of Electricity Delivery and Energy Reliability. I am the coordinator of the reporting processes for OE's Recovery Act efforts. I'd like to welcome all of you to this webinar this morning where we're going to talk about Recovery Act recipient reporting on federalreporting.gov and also the DOE corporate reporting requirements as they are spelled out in the award agreements for the Smart Grid Investment Grants. We have folks from both the investment grants and the demo projects on the line, and I know that for the demo projects, you're only concerned with the first part of this webinar regarding the federalreporting.gov, so you all will be free to go after that's over with. But for the rest of us, we'll stick around in the second part to talk about DOE's specific reporting requirements for the investment grants. So again, I'd like to welcome you all. I hear that we have great attendance, even though it's Good Friday, so thank you for making the time to do this. We hope to convey some useful information to you about these reporting requirements. But keep in mind that because of some of the complexity with these reporting requirements, we'll need to follow up with you, and you'll obviously have questions for us that we'll want to be able to respond to you on. And a point on the format, what we're going to do for the question and answer is we're going to have you submit questions to us, and then we're going to collect those, prepare responses, and then provide you a written response so that we can be pretty clear about making sure we answer your question as fully and comprehensively as possible. One more point I'd like to make before I turn it over to our friends with the Recovery Act Clearinghouse to talk about federal reporting. For the investment grants specifically, we now have 30 awards that were completed before March 31st. Because of that, all 30 of those awards are required to submit reports to federalreporting.gov by the April 10th deadline. And I just want to reiterate the importance of doing that, even though, you know, you came on board pretty late in the quarter. You still will be required to do a report. That being said, we're going to do as much as we can to help you on fulfilling that requirement. DOE has a spreadsheet that has some basic award information that we will provide to you, and we'll be here to answer any questions that you have. The Recovering Act Clearinghouse will be there to answer any questions that you have. We're going to do everything we can to help you comply with that requirement with as little burden as possible. So with that being said, I'll turn it back over to our friends at the Recovery Act Clearinghouse to take us through the federalreporting.gov reporting.
Department of Energy's webinar on recipient reporting into federalreporting.gov for grant, loan, and cooperative agreement recipients for the reporting period beginning April 1st, 2010. Just a couple of administrative notes. You're welcome to submit questions through this webinar at any time. Your questions will be answered as soon as possible following the webinar. In addition, questions can be submitted at any time to the Recovery Act Clearinghouse, and we'll provide contact information for you during this presentation. In addition, this presentation and a tape of the webinar can also be found on the DOE Recovery Act webpage under Help with federalreporting.gov. In this webinar today, we're going to cover some basic background on the Recovery Act, the overall reporting requirements, specifically talk about jobs guidance. We'll talk about the technical application, federalreporting.gov. We'll share with you some available resources to assist you in your reporting, and then we'll do a detailed review of the actual reporting template and the associated field-by-field guidance. So, the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act was signed on February 17, 2009, and its main purpose was to stimulate the economy and create and retain jobs. And this reporting is one of the ways that the government is using to measure the success. And in keeping with that, Section 1512 of the Recovery Act outlines these reporting requirements, which says recipients required will answer important questions such as who's receiving Recovery Act dollars and in what amount, what projects and activities are being funded with Recovery Act dollars, and what's the completion status of these projects or activities, and what impact have they had on job creation and retention. And then when published on www.recovery.gov, these reports provide the public with an unprecedented level of transparency into how federal dollars are being spent and will drive accountability for the timely, prudent, and effective spending of these dollars. So what are the overall reporting requirements? If you receive your grant or loan, if it's signed by the Department of Energy on or before March 31st, 2010, you must file a report in the period by April 10th, 2010. So reporting will open on April 1st. You must file a report by April 10th. Reporting will continue quarterly, and all reporting is cumulative with the exception of jobs. Just a note, these reporting requirements through federalreporting.gov do not exempt you from any other DOE or other reporting requirements. So if you have questions about program-specific reporting requirements, please direct them to your contracting officer. This is the schedule as best we understand it today. Please note it is subject to change. Registration is open now. You are encouraged to register if you haven't already. And on April 1st, federalreporting.gov will be open for you to issue reports for the period of January 1st through March 31st, 2010. You can enter in reports between the 1st of April and the 10th of April. After 11:59 p.m. Pacific time on April 10th, you will not be able to load new reports. On April 11th and 12th, prime recipients will have the opportunity to review and edit data in existing reports, but will not be able to input any new reports. Starting on April 13th is the federal review of the data. Please note, as a recipient, you may be contacted by a program manager or reviewer to ask questions about the report, and you may or may not be asked to make corrections. Data can be corrected in these reports if the report is unlocked by the agency. That period continues through 11:59 p.m. Pacific time on April 29th. And on April 30th, these reports will be published on www.recovery.gov. So as a prime recipient, what do you need to report? You need to report data related to yourself as the prime recipient. You need to report data related to subrecipients. You may choose to delegate some of the reporting to your subrecipients. That's fine. We just caution to make sure that you make it clear and that everybody understands who's reporting what, so no subrecipient data is missing or duplicated. The one exception to this is jobs numbers. You, as a prime recipient, need to collect the jobs created number from your subrecipient. Subrecipients cannot report that number directly. In addition, you need to report, as a prime recipient, data related to your vendors. We provide an example for you here of the difference between a subrecipient and a vendor. So if you take the state as a prime recipient, a weatherization agency such as the Community Action Agency would be the subrecipient, and the company that the subrecipient buys insulation from or uses to install the insulation would be a vendor. Jobs guidance. You need to report the actual direct jobs reported as an FTE. Direct jobs are those that are defined as those directly funded by the Recovery Act. Note, as in last quarter, jobs calculations are not cumulative, but should be based only on the reporting quarter. And we'll share an example with you in just a minute. If you have a cost share or cooperative agreement, you need to calculate the jobs based only on the portion of funds attributed to the Recovery Act. So in our next example, we'll look at how to calculate jobs and give you an example. So the formula is the total number of hours worked and funded by the Recovery Act within the reporting quarter divided by the quarterly hours in a full-time schedule, which gives you the number of jobs you need to report. So the first step is to calculate the hours in a full-time schedule. And once you've done this once, you can use the same denominator, assuming it hasn't changed, for all subsequent quarters. So the example we use here is that 40 hours is a full-time work week. Multiply that by 52 weeks a year, and it's 2,080 hours per year. 2,080 hours divided by 4 quarters per year is 520 quarterly hours. So that's the denominator we're going to use in this example. If your industry has a different standard work week, you can use the same formula, the number of hours in a full-time schedule times 52 weeks in a week times 52 weeks a year, and divided by 4 quarters to determine what your denominator would be. So then what you need to do is you need to collect the total number of hours worked and funded within the quarter. And so, for example, we've got here, and we've got 2 quarters here. And just to reiterate that you need to focus only on the current reporting quarter. So those highlighted in yellow is the current quarter, and that's what we're going to use to determine our numbers. So we have 2 employees here, and we have 2 sub-recipients, employees as well. Because as a grant or loan recipient, you need to collect those hours from your grant, from your sub-recipients as well. So with these 4 employees, we have 1,400 hours for the quarter. So we're going to take that number into step 3 and divide that by what we just, the quarterly hours in a full-time schedule from step 1. So 1,400 hours divided by 520 hours in a full-time schedule gives us an amount of 2.7 jobs, which would be the number that would be reported into federalreporting.gov. Now, if you have a cooperative agreement or a cost share and your hours are based on the total project, then you need to determine the portion of that that is associated with the Recovery Act with the federal funds. So in this, if we take that, we continue from the previous example, and we assume that there was $100 million in total investment in the project, of which $50 million was provided by the Department of Energy, then you're going to calculate the DOE share, which would be $50 million divided by $100 million, or 50%. So then, to calculate the number of jobs with the cost share, you'd multiply the FTEs created or retained from the quarter, which you calculated in step 3, by the DOE share, so 2.7 jobs times 50% would be 1.35 jobs created. And again, that information in this example is all available on the DOE webpage, and we'll show you that later in this presentation. So in order to report, the first step you need to do is to register on federalreporting.gov. The registration includes personal, recipient, and organizational information. You must have a DUNS number and be registered in CCR to register. We also recommend that you check the company information in CCR to confirm it's accurate, because that information is used for contact purposes. Registration can take place at any time, and early registration is encouraged. We have some more detailed information about how to register on the DOE webpage. The other piece that's key is once you've registered, you're going to get a federal reporting PIN, also called an FR PIN. You need that PIN to report. You cannot submit your report without that PIN, and it's going to be sent to the company representative that's listed as the contract in CCR, which may or may not be the registrant. So be sure that you know who that person is in CCR so you can reach out to them and get the FR PIN. You have 3 options for reporting on federalreporting.gov. The first is an Excel spreadsheet. It's available for download on federalreporting.gov. You just download it, fill it out. We'll go through it in just a few minutes, and then upload it. There is also a validation tool available that you can use to make sure that it will load properly. Please note, passing the validation doesn't mean your report's been submitted. You need to make sure you submit your report as well. It's also very important when you download it, when you hit the download templates here, you're going to get a zip folder with two different forms in there. You need to make sure that you select the proper one. So if you're a grant loan or cooperative agreement, you need to select the grant form and not the contract form. And on the DOE webpage, we'll show it to you in a minute, there is a recipient information spreadsheet where if you're not sure if you have a grant or a contract, you can look it up and we'll tell you which one it is. For the more tech-savvy of you, the second option is an XML schema. Right below downloading the Excel file is a place where you can download that schema. And the third option is the online form, where you just log into federalreporting.gov and enter the data in straight into the online system. If you use this option when you report again, or if you use any of these options when you report again, through the online form, there's a copy forward function so that you can copy over your information from the previous report so you don't need to enter it all in again. So this is something that's clear. When can you stop reporting quarterly into federalreporting.gov? To report quarterly, we can stop reporting when all of the below criteria are met. The award period is ended. Your period of performance is over. All recovery funds have been received through drawdown, reimbursement, or invoice. The project is complete. And you have submitted a report in federalreporting.gov that meets all of the following conditions. It shows that all the funds have been received, and the field is total federal amount, ARRA, funds received, invoiced. We'll talk about that when we go through the Excel template. Your report shows that all the funds have been expended, total federal amount of our expenditure. The project status field is marked fully complete, and in the final report field, you've marked yes, this is your final report. When you've done that, when you've submitted that report and finished your project, then your reporting obligations in federalreporting.gov are done. Note, if you have completed your work and you've invoiced or drawn down all your funds, but the period of performance date is in a future quarter, you may mark your report as final only if there's no expectation of new future Recovery Act work on the same award. Moving to the next slide. Okay, we're going to look at the Excel template. This is what it looks like, the Excel template. These are the fields that you need to report on. The first field over here in C6 is the award type. It's a drop-down box. You'll note too that you get a little, you get the definitions of each field as you go through. And this is a grant or a loan. If you have a cooperative agreement, it is defined as a grant. Select grant. In E6, you have the award number. If you don't know your award number, you can look it up in the recipient information spreadsheet on our webpage. We'll show that to you in a minute. F is where you indicate if this is the final report or not. As I went through, you should indicate N unless you're going to meet, this report meets all the criteria that I just laid out in terms of the project being complete, all the funds received or drawn down, and all the funds spent. C10 is the recipient's DUNS number. Again, we've provided this to you on the DOE webpage on the recipient information spreadsheet that we'll show you in a minute. E10 is the recipient account number. This is just something internally. If you'd like to use it for yourself, it is not required. F is the recipient's congressional district. If you don't know your congressional district, you can look it up at www.govtrack.us. And we'll also show you on our webpage where you can find that link. C1400 is the funding agency code, and column E has the awarding agency code. In most cases, this will be 8900 for both, which is the U.S. Department of Energy. These numbers are up in the recipient reporting information spreadsheet that I showed you earlier, or that I will show you later. In addition to some programs, I know science has asked that 8925, the science code, be used. That's fine. In F is the award date. This is the date the award was signed. We've also made this available to you on the DOE webpage, and we'll show you where in a minute. C16 is the amount of the award. For grants, it is the total amount of federal dollars on the award, not just what is currently obligated. And for loans, it's the face value of the loan. In E16 is the CFDA number. We've provided that to you on the DOE webpage. We'll show you where in a minute. We've also provided the program source, the task number. The subaccount number for TAS is you can leave that blank. It's not required. The next three are all related. So the first one is the total number of subawards to individuals. So this is the count of the subawards to individuals, and then in column E you provide the dollar amount of subawards to individuals. So again, it's a count and a dollar amount, and you do the same thing for the total number of payments to vendors less than $25,000 per award. It's a count and a dollar amount. And again, for subawards that are less than $25,000, it's a count and a dollar amount. In row 26 is where you provide a text description of the award, of what you're doing. Just a recommendation, remember that this information will be published on recovery.gov, so you want to make sure you're writing something that someone from the public would understand. In row 31, you provide the project name or project program title. In column E, it's the project status. This is a drop-down menu. Anytime you have a little arrow there, it's a drop-down menu. You must select the value from that drop-down menu. You can't just type in something and pick it up. You actually have to pick a value. So in project status, you have four choices: not started, less than 50% completed, completed 50% or more, or fully completed. Column F is where you provide the total federal amount of ARRA funds received or invoiced. For grant and loan recipients, you need to focus here on the word received. So this is payments from the federal government. It's what you've received. C3334 here is where you put the number of jobs, using the example I showed you earlier, including the subrecipient jobs. E is a text description of the types of jobs that you've created. It can be a list of job titles. It can be a narrative about the types of jobs. Again, this information will be published on recovery.gov, so please make sure you're clear, and then anybody who looked at it from the public would understand. Same again for the quarterly activities project description, just a brief description of the overall purpose and expected results of the award. In this section, you need to provide the activity codes. Note, if you have if your project is infrastructure related, you need to use the NAICS codes, and you can look them up over here on the right. Note, there is no formal definition of infrastructure, so we're asking recipients to use their best judgment as to whether a project is infrastructure related or not. If your project is not infrastructure related, you need to use the NTE codes that are there at the end after all the NAICS codes on the drop-down menu. And we provide this information to you on the website as well. but you need to, we've given you a key. So if you have an environmental award, we ask you C01. A science and technology award, U01. A witherization award, L03.04. An energy resource program that conserves existing energy resources, ensures efficient use of available energy, and develops new energy sources while protecting the quality of the environment, would be C05.02. And if none of the above fit, you can use Z99. You can also look up these codes and look up provided in the template on the right. You can put in up to 10 codes. You only have to put one. C48 is the total federal amount of ARA expenditure. This is the amount of money that you've spent so far on the project. So of what's been that's been expended to the project. So this may be more or less than what you've actually received, but you need to focus on what have you spent so far and put that number there. E48 is the total federal infrastructure expenditure. So if you've determined your project's infrastructure, you need to put here what portion of the expenditure from column C was infrastructure related and provide contact name and information for that infrastructure project. Just a couple of notes on any time you see an address in this field. Infrastructure for state is a drop-down menu. You need to select from the drop-down menu the appropriate state. And for zip codes, we're looking for the 9-digit zip code with no dash between before the last 4 extension. So just all 9 numbers across. Again, if you've determined your project is infrastructure related, you need to, in this text box here, discuss the infrastructure purpose and rationale. Again, all this information is published on recovery.gov, so please make sure that you're as clear as possible. The next section is primary place of performance. We understand that there may be cases where you have more than one place of performance. You need to put whichever one is primary or whichever one has the most amount of work associated with it. So again, it's the address, the city, state. Again, it's a drop-down menu. And the zip code, the no dash before the 4-digit extension. You need to provide the congressional district. And the congressional district, you can look up at www.govtrack.us, and I'll show you where you can find that link on the DOE website as well. The country is also a drop-down. The last section on the prime recipient tab is highly compensated officers. Note, you only need to, the first section is, does this apply to you or not? And there's a little yes-no drop-down. In order to put yes, all 3 of the following conditions must apply. At least 80% of your company's revenue in the last fiscal year were from federal funds. You've received at least $25 million in total federal funds, not just Recovery Act. And senior executives do not report their compensation publicly via the Security Exchange Commission or the Internal Revenue Service. So if this information is not available publicly, if you had more than 80% of total company revenue from the federal government and $25 million or more in annual revenue from federal contracts, loans, or grants, then you need to put yes and list each officer's name and their associated total compensation. If all 3 do not apply, you can press no and move on to subrecipient reporting. So let's move on to subrecipient. This is the subrecipient tab. In row 6, all of this information is associated with the prime award. This is so that the report can be linked back. You put the award type, so it's the same as on the previous page, and then the prime recipient, the award number. Again, we'll provide that to you, but this is the prime's award number and the prime's DUNS number. And then starting in row 10 is the subrecipient specific information. Each subrecipient who received more than $25,000 in award needs to be listed separately here. So the first thing is the subrecipient's DUNS number. The sub-award number. This is the award number assigned by the prime recipient to the sub. The sub-recipient's congressional district, again, www.govtrack.us. It's a place to look that up. You need to do the total, the anticipated total amount of funds to be dispersed to the sub-awardee over the life of the award. The total of funds dispersed to date. The date the sub-award was made. And again, this is primary place of performance information. Again, if there's more than one primary place of performance, the subrecipient you need to pick, whichever was primary. States are again a drop-down. The zip code, forget the dash. And the congressional district can be found at www.govtrack.us. And the country is a drop-down as well. Subrecipients are also expected to report executive compensation if the same three rules apply, which again is 80% or more of funds from federal government, of total revenue for the company, $25 million or more in total federal funds, and there's no other public information about executive salaries. So if it's no for your subrecipient, you just press no and move down to the next row in the next subrecipient. If it's yes, you need to put yes and list each officer's name and their associated compensation. And that's it for subrecipient reporting. So you list all your subrecipients here that received more than $25,000 per award. And the last page here is vendors. Again, in row 6, this is the prime award number. So the award number assigned by the Department of Energy to the prime. Starting in row 9 is where the vendor information, and these are vendors who receive more than $25,000 in a single payment. You provide the sub-award number. This is only required if the vendor is a vendor of the sub-recipient. The preference in C9 is that you list the vendor's DUNS number. If the vendor does not have the DUNS number, the vendor name and 9-digit zip code is acceptable. You provide a description of the product and service that's being provided by the vendor and the amount of the payment. And again, each vendor paid more than $25,000 in a single payment would be reported here. And that's it for the recipient reporting requirements. And we're going to show you now the DOE webpage and where we can get more information, show you where resources are available to help you report. So here's the main DOE webpage. Right here, there's a button called Help, a link, helpwithfederalreporting.gov. Click on that. And you'll get this page. And on this page, we've provided a link here in the middle to federalreporting.gov and some additional guidance down the right. But first, what I want to call your attention to is this Federal Reporting Recipient Information Spreadsheet, which is where we've pulled together as many of the data fields as we possibly can to assist you with your reporting. So we'll bring that up. And here you can look up your award, your name, your company name, provide the contract number, the award type, so if you have a question about which form you should use, we'll tell you here the amount of the award. We're showing right now whether somebody from your company is registered in federalreporting.gov or not, the project associated with your award, your DUNS number. As a grant loan recipient, we're providing the CFDA code. We have the award date, the awarding agency code, the funding agency code, and the program source number. All that information available to you to assist you with your reporting, so you can just cut and paste it right from here into your report. So if we go back to the web page, we'll show you some other resources. So down the right-hand side here, we have instructions on how to register, field-by-field instructions for grant and loans and for contractors. Note in there as well, it goes field-by-field as the fields I talked through on the Excel template. We talked through them all. There's information on what needs to be reported and where to find that information. The link to looking up congressional districts is in these presentations as well. We've provided you links to the relevant OMB guidance related to reporting. As well as links to the Office of Science guidance and other guidance that's out here. Down at the bottom here in the middle is the invitation that told you about this webinar. And you will also find this webinar presentation available there, the transcript associated with it, and the PowerPoint slides that we went through. We still haven't answered all your questions. We have an in-depth frequently asked questions section here that you can access on the left. And through Ask an Expert, DOE Recovery Act Clearinghouse, you have the ability to contact someone at the Recovery Act Clearinghouse to ask your question. And all of these resources are available to help you report. And again, you need to report between April 1st and April 10th, 2010. So again, if you have further questions, please visit the Recovery Act website, helpwithfederalreporting.gov, to access the recipient information spreadsheet, which will provide a lot of the codes you need for reporting. If you still have questions, the Clearinghouse is available Monday through Friday from 9 to 7 Eastern. You can also send them an email through their contact form. And then finally, we just wanted to let you know that we'd love to hear your stories about your Recovery Act work you're doing. And if you'd like to submit them to us, you can submit your tech stories via a web form at energy.gov/recovery/stories.cfm. You can also send pictures and videos to us at recoverystories@hq.doe.gov. Thank you for what you're doing, and please contact us if you have any questions about your reporting.
Okay, so that was the segment of this webinar that covers federalreporting.gov, and just like to thank Penny Blank, who was the presenter, and the whole Recovery Act Clearinghouse team for all the work that they're doing helping us and helping the recipients comply with those ARRA reporting requirements. We're going to move on to the second part of the webinar now, and I just want to reiterate that the material we'll be discussing here is specifically for recipients of the investment grants, and so the folks who are under the demonstration project award, you don't need to stick around for this if you have to get on. That being said, one other point I'd like to reiterate before moving on is, again, and Penny mentioned this, the deadline for the federal reporting is April 10th, and if you have a final award that was completed prior to March 31st, or if for the investment grants you were one of the 14 who got a signed agreement on December 24th, you are to report for this cycle before that April 10th deadline. So I just wanted to make that point again. So we'll move on now into the investment grant corporate reporting requirements, and these are the requirements that we put in place in attachment B of the award agreement. So we're going to talk about this additional jobs reporting that goes beyond what's asked for on federalreporting.gov. We're going to talk about project performance data, which ties to the project execution plans and the PVMS data that's spelled out in the award agreement. And we're going to talk about the risk management piece, which is also part of the PEPS. And then finally, we're going to introduce you to CYPRESS, which will be our data repository. It'll be the place where you submit your data to DOE. It is a special website and database that is both secure, so you can feel confident that your data is locked away and safeguarded, but it's also an easy-to-use forum for you to provide this data, hopefully in a way that's fairly easy for you and not too much of a burden. And so my colleague Jonathan Arnold will walk you through that at the end of this presentation. So moving on to the jobs reporting requirements. So Penny explained what is required for federalreporting.gov. And so here within the Department of Energy, we made a decision that because the investment grants are require that cost share from the recipients, DOE is funding no more than 50% of any particular project. The ARRA reporting isn't necessarily going to capture all of the jobs data or all the jobs created and retained that your project will be generating. And we wanted to make sure that we captured that information. And so we have put into the award agreements this additional requirement. And so what we're asking you to do is to report the same data that federalreporting.gov is asking for with a couple of additions. First, we're asking you to report the jobs created or retained on the entire project, not just the portion funded through federal dollars. Secondly, we're going to ask for jobs, direct jobs created, whether they're by the prime recipient, the sub-recipient, or even the vendor. So the question here is, what's a direct job versus an indirect job? For DOE, we basically spell it out this way, very simply. A direct job is one that would not have been created had it not been for the introduction of federal funds to your project. In other words, if it's a job that was dependent upon getting federal funds for this project to go forward, then we'd consider that a direct job. Everything else is indirect. We do, or we have created on CYPRESS the opportunity for you, if you choose to do so, to report indirect jobs. This is not to meet any specific requirement, and it's not mandatory. You don't have to do it. But we thought that it would be a good data point to collect. So if you wish to provide it, if you have it handy, and you wish to report indirect jobs, we'll give you the opportunity to do that. Again, not a mandatory requirement. If you don't do it, there's no consequences. So back to the direct jobs, I kind of want to walk you through exactly how we're asking you to provide this data. And what we figured was it's probably the simplest thing to have you report the total hours worked on your project for the reporting period. And just to clarify, the reporting period is going to be quarterly. So your jobs data, no matter where you're reporting it, is always going to be quarterly. If we can go back to the spreadsheet real quick, I'll just show you. Again, we're going to ask you for things that are in those yellow highlighted fields. And it's basically the total hours worked in the period. All those blue fields are calculations that we're going to do for you. You don't have to get that data. You don't have to fill that data in. We're going to provide it for you. The beauty here is that if you can provide us a total hours worked, we can do the calculation that's going to give you the ARRA-funded hours worked that you're going to need to fill in for federalreporting.gov. So in essence, if you can fulfill this reporting requirement for jobs, you're going to fulfill all of them. So hopefully it's a way to simplify this process for you. And let me point out, the example here is a sort of a mock project. It's not a real project. And so the numbers may not make sense in terms of a quarterly calculation. Don't worry about that. So basically what we're going to ask for you, quarterly hours. Now you'll see that we have a number of job categories, and I want to kind of walk you through what we're doing here. As you all know from the previous webinar on metrics and benefits reporting back in March, there's a lot of interest and emphasis on the reporting of build metrics and the metrics and benefits of these projects. And part of that includes jobs information. And so to help with the metrics and benefits reporting, what we're asking you to do is to split your hours into one of these categories and break down the total hours worked into these categories. And where you'll get definitions for what these categories are is the metrics and benefits guidebook that's available on smartgrid.gov. If you participated in that webinar last month on the metrics and benefits, then you've heard about the guidebook and you know what I'm talking about. If you don't, if you didn't attend that webinar or you have a question about that, please feel free to submit a question here or just go to smartgrid.gov. The metrics and benefits guidebook is there on that site, and you can download it, and it'll explain these categories. So again, if you can provide the data here for the hours worked in these categories, we'll do all the calculations to sum these up and roll these up so that we can report corporately here at DOE how many jobs Smart Grid Investment Grants Program has created. That's really what we're trying to get at here. Okay, so that's basically it on jobs. And I'll point out a couple of more things before we wrap this up. Again, we're asking for the total number of hours for each of those labor categories, both funded, federally funded and privately funded, or you know, some other funding source that you're using as your cost share. And we're going to do the calculations to get the FTE totals and all of that. And again, the indirect hours, totally optional. If you want to report it, if you have it handy, we would encourage it. But if it's too much of a burden, then certainly we wouldn't ask you to take that on. So that's totally your call. Just to give you some ideas of what indirect is, it would be things like your subcontractors, your suppliers, your material suppliers, administration, central service, that kind of stuff. Okay, so that pretty much covers the jobs reporting as spelled out in the award agreements. Going to move on to risk management. So if you recall from the award agreement, in the deliverables section, I think it's clause 30 of the award agreement, we ask for a project execution plan, and we give you a template to provide that project execution plan in. And once your award is finalized, you have 30 days to submit a draft project execution plan, and then 60 days from the award date to get the final plan approved. As part of that project execution plan, we're asking for risk management data. What we're asking for is very similar to what you provided as part of your original proposals when you responded to the federal funding opportunity announcement back last summer. So a lot of this work you've already done. So when, and to give you an example, if you had a risk plan that got a thumbs up from DOE, all we would want you to do is kind of update that for, you know, what's transpired in the last 6 months or so, and then fit that into the format that we've given you in the agreement language, and you can submit that. If you still had some work to do on the risks, then obviously we want you to address those issues and submit it in the format spelled out in the award agreement. In terms of the actual reporting, what we're going to ask for on a monthly basis are updates to those risks that you identify as part of your project execution plan. This would be the likelihood of occurrence of a particular risk, any impact on your cost or schedule, the consequence if the risk is realized, and a mitigation or handling strategy for the risks that you've identified. Again, what we're asking for are updates to what you provided in your project execution plan on any of these topics, or if you have new risks that you've identified, obviously we'd like you to report those. If there is no change to a risk that you've identified in your PEP, then there's really nothing you need to report on it. Again, we want to lighten the burden a little bit here, so there's nothing to report, there's nothing to report. So the question of how frequently is this being required? Now, I told you before, the jobs data, that's quarterly. The risk data, however, we're asking for these updates monthly. We have been granted a waiver from the Paperwork Reduction Act by the Office of Management and Budget to collect this information on a monthly basis. It is a what's called an emergency approval, which allows us to collect this information for 6 months. We have to go back to OMB and request an extension to continue this over the life of the projects. And we will do that in the summer, in July and August. There will be an opportunity for you to submit comments. This will go out on the Federal Register notice. So you will have an opportunity to submit comments about our request, however you feel about it, to OMB, which they will take under consideration in their review of our request. So I just wanted to bring that to your attention. So be on the lookout for that in July and August. So the risk data we're asking for monthly, as well as the rest of the project execution data, the PBMS data. Moving on to the next slide, you can see there's a spreadsheet here of, you know, kind of a mock-up of a risk submission, again from a generic company. So these are the kind of things that we're looking for. We're looking for, you know, what's the title of the risk, a brief description of what that risk is, then the likelihood on a low, medium, and high scale likelihood of occurrence, the impact on your cost or schedule, again, low, medium, or high, and then a little narrative of the consequence of the risk and how you're handling that risk. So, you can choose from either you're avoiding the risk, you're mitigating the risk, or you've accepted the risk. And then finally, your risk mitigation strategy, if your handling strategy is to mitigate the risk. We're interested in knowing how you're going to go about that. Again, this is what you'll submit with your project execution plans. Once those are submitted, they'll be uploaded into Cypress, and then all you'll be required to do on a monthly basis is for those risks that have changed, or if any new risks have been discovered, you would update us on those. If there's been no change, then there's nothing you need to do. Okay, so that's basically it for the corporate reporting requirements. We haven't really talked much about the PVMS data. That's by design for this webinar. There's going to be some separate reaching out to you on that information. Again, we're very, very new into this post-award phase. In fact, for 70 of the awards, we're not in the post-award phase yet. So when you reach the point where you've got a final award, again, you're on the clock to get us that project execution plan. And when it's time for that, that's when we'll walk you through what the expectations are on providing PVMS data. Again, any questions that you may have about anything we've talked about on risks or jobs, please feel free to submit them here. Also, there's going to be an opportunity to view this webinar again, either from the Recovery Act Clearinghouse or from smartgrid.gov or the OE website. We'll talk about that at the end. And what I'll do now is turn this over to Jonathan Arnold, my comrade here at DOE, I should say colleague, and he's going to walk you through Cypress, which is our portal for you to submit the project data to DOE. So, Jonathan Arnold.
Good afternoon, everybody. I appreciate your time. This is going to be a high-level walkthrough of Cypress. You've heard about federalreporting.gov, which is to submit the data required by OMB and by the government as a whole. Matt has just walked you through some DOE-specific requirements for jobs and risks, and has also alluded to some further requirements for project baseline reporting. For project baseline reporting, as Matt had indicated, the TPOs will reach out to the recipients as these things are awarded. For DOE-specific reporting requirements, it was felt the best way to facilitate this and to reduce the burden on the recipients was to develop a very simple, very easy-to-use system. Cypress is a system that's based on standard technology, SharePoint, SQL Server, Microsoft-based. It has also been through the Federal Information Security Management Act tests, so it has been certified. And so we know that it will be able to protect everybody's data appropriately. So as we go on to the next slide, we can talk a little bit about the system. The login to the system will be through smartgrid.gov. Before you log in, there will be some dialogue where personnel for each recipient will be issued a username and password, and I'll go into some detail on that towards the end of the presentation. We've also set up a help desk to answer any questions. You can call the help desk or you can email the help desk. and they can deal with any questions about access to the system, any issues with lost or misplaced passwords, or any issues accessing the website from your facility. For access control, each recipient will only see their own project. No recipient will have access to any other recipient's data. And the TPOs can collaborate with each other and with the recipients as appropriate. On the next slide, this just sort of describes the roles of the people using the system. So as recipients, there'll be updates to the project baseline, to the actual performance data, jobs, risks, and any other reports that are, you know, agreed upon between you and your TPO. For the TPOs and support staff, we'll enter the baseline and we'll also update our own analysis, and the help desk will help everybody resolve any issues. On the next slide, what I want to do is go quickly through each of the data entry screens. There is extensive help available. There is a set of instructions. There's also online help. And again, the email for the help desk and the phone number for the help desk. Also, the TPOs will be trained. They've already seen the system and provided some feedback, and they will receive more training on the operation of the system, so they can also provide some guidance. So we're not going to go in detail about entering all the data. What we were hoping to do is show you real quick what the system's going to look like, so that when you start using it, you will have seen it before. And again, there'll be more sessions where there'll be some more details about entering the data. So there's a few data entry screens that correspond to the data that Matt went through earlier. And what I was going to do is show you a screenshot of each of these screens. So on the next slide, this is the splash screen or the entry screen for Cypress, the Smart Grid Integrated Project Reporting Information System. We may have the picture change occasionally to make it interesting, but you can see that I'm already logged in. You know, I'm Jonathan Arnold, and it gives me the capability to upload Excel spreadsheets or to enter data on forms. On the next slide, this is the project performance baseline. This data will be entered on the recipient's behalf by the TPOs or their support staff. You will recognize much of this from your agreement, the level of reporting that the agreement specifies, which is basically top line. So basically the first level of the WBS. There's also some dates and some budgeted costs of work scheduled. At the beginning, all the work is scheduled. There's no work that's been performed yet. So you'll see that here. These are standard reports. You could actually create these out of most project management tools. On the next slide, this is the results of, this is the actuals, the project performance actuals. So this allows the recipients to edit what they've actually spent and which dates they've actually kept. So there's information like the task name, the status of the task, how much they've spent so far, any comments about that activity, and then there's some PVMS data values that are also entered in the columns to the right. What's the budgeted cost of work scheduled, the budgeted cost of work performed, the actual cost of work performed, and then an estimate to complete. These are standard terms. They're defined, you know, in the industry. We're not asking for anything really different from what you'd report on any size project. On the next slide, this is the jobs reporting. This is very similar to the spreadsheet that Matt showed earlier. And again, you have the option of filling out this form, and it's fairly easy to fill out the form. You press the edit button, and it would prompt you for the data values for each of these form for each of these values. Alternatively, there is also an upload capability to upload the spreadsheet that Matt described. On the next page, this is a sample risks. This is for our sample project, so your risks are going to look much different. And again, this allows you to update the risks on a monthly basis. The title of the columns corresponds to the columns that were in the spreadsheet Matt displayed. Just a couple of items that we could cover here. The risk code is really your code, and it doesn't have to start at 1. It can be your risk identification code. You may choose to maintain these risks in some sort of a database and then export them, you know, to this to our reporting tools. And so this might make it easier for you to track, you know, the risk that you reported. And then, of course, the short title, the description, the probability of occurrence, what impact it would have, the consequence if the risk was realized, the strategy, and specific details about the mitigation. On the next slide. Okay, so really the system's very simple. There's only a few screens, and those screens are really form-driven. We are going to have a series of updates to the system in the next few months, and so I know the TPOs and Matt would also be extremely interested in your feedback. We would answer any questions that you had now, but also as you use the system and encounter any issues or have any suggestions for improvement, we're very interested in those. This is a real quick summary of how recipients would register to use the system. Basically, in the next few days, it would be it might be valuable for folks to decide who would have access, and there's two types of recipient access to CYPRS. There's read-only access, which might be for a reviewer function for each recipient, and then there's also a read-write access where that would be for the data entry function. The other, the next step is that the self-service recipient registration will be available April 12th. What will happen is each recipient will let the TPO know which people should be registered for CYPRS for reporting. They'll be emailed, each person would be emailed rules of behavior and a user registration form. The rules of behavior are necessary because this is a federal system, and they basically specify things like you won't share your password and you'll do your best to enter valid data. But these are just sort of standard rules of behavior that most people have probably seen with every other system. They have to be signed, and they can be scanned and emailed back or faxed or sent in the mail. DOE will confirm the registration, and then each person at the recipient site will receive instructions by email for obtaining a username and password. It's a 15-minute process to actually get the username and password, which are sent by a secure email. So maybe the biggest issue is who would each recipient provide access to CYPRS. After that, it's a pretty quick process to register people. And as you can see, the screens are pretty easy to fill out. On the next slide. I'm going to turn it over to Matt to talk about next steps. Thank you very much.
Okay. There's a couple of things I want to kind of reiterate on what Jonathan just talked about for your benefit. And I think chief among those is this time frame we have here between now and April the 12th for you to figure out within your organization who needs to be the person to either upload or input the data into CYPRS and to request that access. And then also, if there are folks in your organization, perhaps a CEO or a project manager or, you know, anyone who has an interest in having a view-only access to the data, My suggestion would be that you find at least two people to be the folks to upload or input data, you know, one primary, one backup, or a couple of backups or something like that. And then the number who can have view access can be larger. That's really your call, although we probably would ask questions if the list was like 100 people. So I would encourage you to go ahead and get started on that process of identifying those folks and then contacting your TPO and giving them that list. And then the TPOs will provide it to us so that we can verify when we start getting actual requests for access. We are going to verify that the person requesting access is authorized to do so. So this list that we get from you really should come from your point of contact for the grant award. You know, somebody who's by signature authorized to speak for your organization, for your investment grant. If that person has not vouched for the requester, then we're not going to provide access. That is one check that we have to make sure that the data is protected and that people who should not be getting in to this site are not getting into it. Another thing I want to point out, kind of to preemptively answer a question that we're probably going to get, you may have an award that's been finalized. And you're probably in the process of generating your PEP to submit to DOE for approval. And so the question would be, I signed my agreement in March. Do I have to report for April as has been specified in my award agreement? The short answer is yes. However, given that you may not have a finalized PEP, then it's going to be hard for you to actually produce PVMS data or risk management data. So this is what we're going to do. When you log in to do your reporting for April, again, this is if you've got an agreement that was finalized in March, what you're going to do is you're going to get prompted for your PVMS data. The prompt is going to ask you a question. And the question is going to be something like, has your PEP been approved by your TPO or by DOE? If you check no, then that's it. You've complied with your reporting requirement for April, and you can be on your way. If you check yes, then you'll be taken to the next screen to actually input your data or upload your data. So we just wanted to point that out to you because we know we have this issue of folks who are now on the clock to report for April, but their PEP is under consideration or has not been submitted yet. On the jobs data, that's not contingent on approval of your PEP, so we do ask that you submit your jobs data since this is the end of the quarter. However, if you signed your agreement on March 31st, we realize that the number of jobs that you're going to be reporting could be very small. So putting a zero is totally appropriate if that is the case, so don't worry about that. You may have asked, if we haven't clarified this, how do I get into Cyprus? Where do I find it? If you go to smartgrid.gov, there is a link for the Smart Grid Investment Grant projects. You click on that link, it takes you to another page, and on that page you're going to see four buttons on the left-hand side of the page. What we've done is we have tried to centralize all of your reporting so we don't give you 10 different places you have to go to. So we're telling you, go to smartgrid.gov. That's the only address you need to know for your reporting. Because from smartgrid.gov, you'll be able to access all of the systems that are in place to collect your data. There's a link to federalreporting.gov. There's a link to your invoice submission process, which I think a lot of you are going to find pretty important. There's a link to the Data Hub for the metrics and benefits, and there's a link to Cypress. So you just click on one of those buttons, depending on which data you want to submit, and it takes you into the system. So that's how you get to Cypress. We're also going to have links, I think, on the OE page. A couple of other points before we wrap up, and this first one is sort of a mea culpa on behalf of OE. We can certainly do a better job of reaching out to you with some of this information that you need going forward on your post-award grant process. For instance, you're probably, especially for those of you who now have awards in place, you're probably pretty curious about what you do for invoicing. We're going to do our best to get that information to you as soon as possible, which would include a sample invoice, so you kind of have an idea of what you want to submit, invoice instructions, and instructions for registering and uploading data to the invoice system itself. We're in the process of putting together welcome packets that the contracting officer will send to you that includes a lot of the information we've talked about today and some other information. These welcome packets are meant to give you some introductory material for this new phase of the process, this phase that we've all been working very hard to get to these last several months. So again, look for those. If you've got an award already, you should be getting the welcome packet, and I've got my fingers crossed here, within a week. Our goal is to get you, for those of you who have awards beginning either today or in the future, our goal is to get you those packets within 5 business days of the execution of your award. And that's an internal goal we've set for ourselves. We're going to do our best to get you this information so you know what's going on and you know what's expected of you on the part of DOE, as well as what you can expect from us in terms of cooperation and assistance. We want to be responsive, we want to get this information out to you, and we want to do everything we can to help make these projects a success. So you may have folks who were not able to attend this webinar today. We're going to make recording of the webinar available. The ARRA portion is available at the DOE Recovery Act Clearinghouse page, which was talked about before, and you can see the link here on the slide. And then this other portion is also going to be available, where we've talked about Cypress and we've talked about the DOE reporting requirements. That'll be on smartgrid.gov, and we'll also put it on the OE homepage just for kicks. We've also provided the help desk contact information for Cypress. That is a dedicated help desk line, and email. All that's for is Cypress. So that you're going to get 100% attention on that line. So I think that is it. Again, any questions that you have, please submit them. I think you've already submitted some. We're going to take those. We're going to put together responses. We're going to be comprehensive and thorough, and then provide you a written response in return so that we make sure we really answer your question and you've got it in writing. I think that's about it. I just want to thank the Recovery Act Clearinghouse for doing all the legwork and getting this webinar set up. And I want to thank the presenters, Penny Blank and Jonathan Arnold. And then most of all, I would like to thank the participants for both the investment grants and the demo projects. We're the reason, you're the reason we are here. So we want to thank you for all that you're doing to implement the Recovery Act and to get the smart grid vision realized.
And so with that, thank you very much, and we look forward to working with you in the future.